This is Careers in New Media with Douglas E. Welch. For more information, visit the website welchwrite.com/CIP. That's welchwrite.com/CIP.
Everyone, as you can tell, my name is Douglas E. Welch. I am a pioneer podcaster. I like to say I was one of the first 20 after the term was coined, mainly because I had a weekly column I was already writing that I already played around with doing an audio version of. So when podcasting came about, it was just a natural, hey, let's. My dad's got a barn, let's do it. I just celebrated my 5th anniversary, September 24th, of my main show, Career Opportunities, which is a audio podcast. It's a weekly career column, both in print and as a podcast. This session is my podcast process, okay? And I really want to be specific about that. This is what I do. This doesn't mean this is what you have to do, but what I'm finding in consulting more and more about new media lately is people need a path through the forest. We did a, under the auspices of my group New Media Interchange, we did a evening at the Writers Guild of America West in Hollywood, and I described it as hacking a path through the forest for these people who have been immersed in the whole entertainment industry all these years, but have no idea how something gets from camera to YouTube. And that's actually what we called it, from camera to YouTube. And that whole session is actually online. You can see it on my website if you care to take a look at that. What I'm going to talk about today is what I've learned over the last 5 years as far as process goes. You're going to see a lot of old school stuff being used, but you'll also very quickly find out that one of my favorite words is free, followed very quickly by cheap. And so I use a lot of just tools that are provided either with your computer or perhaps freely downloadable from the internet. I'm going to start with audio, and then I will talk a little bit about video as we go on. So, how do you do a podcast? Well, first of all, I use GarageBand to record my podcast. I have used GarageBand since I started. It was available, it was multi-tracking, it had some built-in music loops that I could use for my theme song. It was pretty much, even before the addition of all the podcasting elements, of which I actually use very few, it was simply there and one of the best tools at the time to do it. Now, what you'll find that I do with me, since I've been doing a podcast for a while, once I got my intro and my outro kind of set up, I reuse it. I have a template file, which is basically a GarageBand file. I open the last week's show. I go in. I select the track where I recorded that week's show, and I simply get rid of it and start over and just record my audio right into this track. I have a fairly nice condenser microphone at home that I use to do this. I tell people, you mentioned my UCLA Extension class. We teach a class at UCLA Extension. Specifically, it's called Podcasting and New Media for Writers. So these people are coming, you know, not out of an audio background or anything. I give them these tools to kind of get them going and to get them started, because some of the hardest things is getting them going. And so I step them through just recording some very, very basic stuff into GarageBand or also into Audacity, which is another program you'll hear about, another free program. The website for that is audacity.sourceforge.com. Audacity.sourceforge.com. And of course, I typed it in wrong, so forgive me. Org? Or, well, I'll do what I do all the other times. Audacity. Simply type it in and then click on the link in Google. Audacity.sourceforge.net. Yeah. And you'll see there are versions for Mac, Windows, and it works fairly well on both. Forgive me, I broke my own rules and didn't mute my own phone. Don't want to hear it ring the whole time we're here. So, for example, how many people were in Evo Terra's talk this morning? Anybody? He mentioned something, you all are using headphones. I don't have headphones here on this machine, but just very quickly, I'm going to just record something here, and I'm going to say, let's see, I want to mute. Nope, that's solo. Mute these tracks so it doesn't play the music. Helping to build the career you deserve. This is Career Opportunities for November 14th, 2009. A member of Friends in Tech at friendsintech.com. Now, as you go, as you start into podcasting, having a nice microphone is nice, but it isn't really required. If you have a nice quiet place to record. Okay, why are you not playing? The volume stand. Oh, you know why? You'll have to forgive me. I just got this MacBook, and I still have not gotten used to the I haven't got used to the multi-touch on it yet. And one of the things they did is, if you scroll left and right, it changes the volume slider.
Helping to build the career you deserve. This is Career Opportunities for November 14th, 2009.
Okay, very quick, very dirty. You'll see I have a slight fade in the tracks there and various things like that. Because I'm doing a show that's based on a written piece, I basically sit here with my file up in Word, and I work my way through recording it right into GarageBand as I go. This makes it easy to do one thing, which is when I make a mistake in my reading, it makes it very easy to stop, trim back to where I made the mistake, and start from that point and go forward. One of the reasons I do that is because I'm sure if you listen to podcasts for any length of time, you've heard someone who has missed an edit in their podcast. And they're going along, and they'll be saying something, and go, oh, wait a minute, hold on, Russell, and then they'll start up again. I'm paranoid about having those in my show. And so just because of the way I work, it makes it very easy for me to basically trim, restart. I usually try to read a paragraph at a time in. Doesn't always work. Some nights I'm better, some nights I'm worse. And so it's always a little bit hit or miss. That allows me, though, to have a fairly clean recording by the time I'm done with my recording time. Now, my columns are only 700, 750 words. Good point of reference for you. That's about 5 minutes reading at an average pace. I probably maybe read a little bit faster than most, but you want to make sure that you're understandable and readable enough to do it. So if you're looking at time lengths for stuff, 750 words usually comes out to be 5 minutes. The show is probably around 6 minutes with intro and outro. Once I've recorded my show in, if I have any edits, if I have stopped in between paragraphs and stuff, I'll actually go back and I'll listen to any place that I made an edit. And then I will snug them. Because of the nature of the recording, there's a slight pause before it actually starts recording. And so your any place where you have stopped, it'll sound a little bit unnatural. There'll be a kind of an unnaturally long pause. And so if you just go back and you just tighten those up, trim them a little bit and bring them closer together, I do that totally by ear, and it's very much just listen to it and go, oh, that sounds too long, trim, snag it, play it again, and kind of almost saying it with the words that are recorded, and it's very easy actually to figure out what the natural pauses are in there. So what I end up with is kind of what you saw here at the beginning. I'm going to reopen that file. This is an actual show, actually. You end up with a GarageBand file like this. These are the top three are music tracks. This is the voice track. Here you can see where I've kind of snugged the edits together.
Talents and skills. The fact is, we know all of this intuitively.
Break.
But we force ourselves to ignore it.
You can see it was still a very natural pause between the two. Once you get your audio recorded, again, because GarageBand and then the Mac is so nice, we can basically say share, and we say share, send this song to iTunes. And what this does is it takes all of our individual tracks, and sometimes you may only have one track. It depends on how complicated your podcast is. Typically, most of us have music and intro and the actual show. All this still applies, too, if you're doing a live show. You're basically just going to record the show live. You may go back in and do a few edits in your one. I try to urge people not to go too crazy with the editing. Obviously, you want it to sound good, but often with editing, you can go down the rabbit hole. You can wake up 5 hours later and go, what happened to my 5 hours? You know, you've spent it heads down on your editor. So try to come up with a balance between the two of, you know, quality versus time spent, because it is real easy to waste a lot of time editing and not necessarily have a better product out the other side. GarageBand. We send the song to iTunes. It asks us a few questions. Now, typically, I don't worry about the stuff that's filled in at the top because we're going to actually fill in all that stuff correctly later once we're at the end of the process. This little checkbox here, if you're going to do something to this show later, say if you're going to run the Levelator program on it to normalize levels, you're going to basically, or it's going to become part of another show, you don't want to compress the file. You want it to be full quality. It will be larger, but it will be a full quality, and on the Mac, it comes out as an AIFF file. On the Windows machines, it's going to come out as a WAV file. These are uncompressed, large file formats that can then be worked on further without losing any quality. If you take an MP3 and bring it in and work it again and bring it in and work it, basically at each successive compression, when you save that MP3 out, you lose a little quality. It's not nearly as bad as the old copying a copy of a VHS tape, but it will eventually start to sound bad after multiple compressions. It takes a lot longer than a VHS tape, but the same rules apply. There is a compression being applied to these files that literally throws away some of the data in the file that it thinks it doesn't need. And so you do want to, if you're going to do something further with the audio in another program, don't click compress. In my case, this is the MP3 file I'm looking at because I've done all my production in GarageBand. I do check compress. I say make this the MP3 encoder, high quality. If you were in EvoTerra said this morning, you know, you want to basically output it these levels down here, 128 kilobits per second bit rate, stereo, optimized for music. And some people say it's a little overkill for a voice-only podcast. It probably is a little bit, but I was able to hear the difference between this and lower or higher compression levels or lower quality levels, and once I went there, I never went back. The fact is my show is short enough, it really doesn't matter. It's only 6 minutes, so I could put it out at CD quality and probably people still wouldn't have an issue with it. Wouldn't really get me anything further there, but that's one of the benefits of having a shorter show. When I do interviews and stuff, then I have to think about that a little bit because they can get rather large. I click share, and again, we're still using the free tools that come with any Macintosh. Similarly, you can use Audacity to record like we've done here, and then basically export a WAV file and bring that into iTunes like we're going to do in the next step on the PC. It's very much cross-platform. I, in the past, have been traveling and had to do a show and been able to do pretty much everything I do on the Mac on the Windows machine with no trouble. Slightly different programs, but same workflow. Yes?
Do you have the experience
with WavePad? I don't. Is it a recording program? You know, the fact is, if it works for you, it's fine. If it does a decent job recording, it's fine. The object is to get the audio recorded, and it really...
Helping to build the career you deserve. This is Career Opportunity.
Now, this is a complete show.
2009. A member of Friends in Tech.
Okay, so there's the show. Now it's on iTunes, and it's an MP3. Yes?
Now, are you usually just using the mic, right?
No, in my case, I do. As you heard, though, even recording with the built-in mic in a quiet enough environment isn't bad. For the UCLA class, I get them started with that. I play a little game with them because we teach online. And I actually play a game with them that they have to record something, get it exported to MP3, and then upload it to the online classroom. And I guess what microphone they're using, basically. Okay, oh, that was a USB headset. That was the computer. That was the mic on your laptop. That was a nice mic. What was that? You know, the fact is, again, if you have a quiet environment and get close enough to it, even this will do a fairly decent job. Obviously, if you want to step up in quality, what I recommend is some form of condenser microphone. Condenser microphones are typically those large microphones you see on David Letterman's desk, for example. That's an example one. Or if they're filming a television show or something like that. The nice thing is these days, and actually, let me see here, new media church. Can't type today, community. There we go. I will tell you, these are Amazon links, but I tend to use Amazon because, you know, everyone is familiar with it. New Media Interchange, community.newmediainterchange.com is my free new media site. And on that, I actually have a little store in there, which is an Amazon store, because it allows me to put stuff up very quickly. In here, I have a few microphones that are examples of this. The nice thing about it is in the past, it required a mixing board, cables, all the other stuff. Well, nowadays, as you see with the Samson mic here, the Rode mic here, I don't have, I think, a blue snowball up there right now, which I actually do have that someone was nice enough to buy me for my birthday. Those microphones are USB microphones. They don't require anything but the USB cable, which typically comes with them. They plug directly into your computer, so no mixing board required. They talk to any of your audio programs you might want to use to record with. The Blue Snowball, Blue is one of our sponsors here today, and I think they're actually giving away some of the snowballs. It's a big white, looks like a snowball, basically, with a chrome grill on it. And it has three settings on it, direct, cardioid pattern, and omnidirectional pattern. So you can use it for doing a podcast, you can use it recording a live event, or streaming a live event, whatever, and it's very, very flexible, and it really simplifies stuff for people who want to take a step up in their microphone quality but aren't ready to go to the mixing board and the XLR cables and a big, you know, MXL mic for, you know, $300 instead of the $100 it might be for a snowball. That make sense? So if you care to, you can always go back to this site and check out this little store. I try to put up anything new that I find. You'll see some recorders in there like the Zoom H2, the Zoom H4, and others. Because I get that question a lot of, you know, what should I start with? Well, here's some starting points. You have the flip video cameras and such and stuff like that as well. Oh, there's a blue snowball. I do have it up there. That one there. Come on. Unclick. There we go. Nope, clicked on the other one. Come here. There it is. And it comes with a little stand, a little three-legged chrome stand that holds it about this high. What I've been using it for recently is doing, I do these career tips as part of the Career Opportunities podcast, which are video, and I also do these new media tips similarly. And I'll use it as my input, my microphone, because I actually record them with the webcam. I put the webcam, like the laptop up a little bit so it's more at eye level and, you know, do some stuff like that. But basically having that nice, high-quality mic right there makes it so nice to be able to record something fairly down and dirty, but having that bump in audio quality. Any other questions? Yes?
You mentioned the Rode Podcaster mic. Have you ever used that one? I mean, would you be able to recommend that one? Because I know it's rather pricey, and I've heard some people say it's a pretty good one.
It's very pricey, comparatively. It is very nice. The big bump up it has, and some other microphones are starting to have this now, is when you're using a USB mic, one of the things you can't do is monitor while you're recording. I have a mixing board with a standard mic, so I can put my cans on and I can hear myself as I'm recording. With the USB mics, there's actually a delay involved. There's a latency that if you try to monitor yourself while you're recording, you will stutter like crazy because it's about a quarter second delay what you're hearing as to what you're saying. So it just doesn't work. The Rode Podcaster and others get around this by putting on the microphone itself a headphone jack. Obviously, monitoring inside the microphone itself, there is no latency. And so you can still hear yourself, but you don't get that latency. So you get kind of a hybrid between having a full rig and a USB rig. If you're recording with the Snowball, you basically have to record it and then play it back to hear, you know, what it's really going to sound like. As you can tell, I have a little bit of a speech impediment, and I tend to rush things sometimes. What I find with the being able to monitor myself, I can tell when I'm going too fast. I can tell when I've flubbed a word that, you know, I may not have heard if I was just doing it live. But because of the amplification, I can really notice, and I'll stop, and I'll back up and go forward from there. So it can really, really helpful if you have that. Is it required? The Snowball does a pretty darn good job, as does the Samson that I showed, the Samson mic. So, you know, it's a point of how much do you want to spend? You know, how much you want to invest in your podcast? I'm a big fan of invest a very little up front and grow as you go. Because you don't know what's going to happen. You don't know whether it's going to take off. You may pod fade, which may be a term that you've heard. A lot of podcasters start, and then, you know, two or three episodes in, they kind of fade away. Now, one of the reasons I say for that, too, is I often have people coming to me and say, I'm going to do a daily show. No, you're not. Okay? You may do a daily show for a week, maybe a month. You will kill yourself trying to do a daily show. I don't care how short that show is. Even if it's just a, you know, 1 minute tip or something, it is a real treadmill you put yourself on trying to produce a show every day. There's a reason people get paid lots of money to do daily shows. Okay, so be aware of that as well. Also, what helps there is keeping the length of your show shorter. Yes?
If you are using an XLR mic, do you have a big sport or anything like that? Are you, do you have any recommendations for equalizing software or anything like that?
I use a little, very, very little bit of equalization in the tools in GarageBand when I'm recording. I used to do all my compression in GarageBand, just a little bit. Compression is a... compression is a way for, and I am not an audio guru, but compression is a way to kind of get that fatter sound that you hear on radio. You know how radio sounds loud? FM radio, kind of all the music kind of sounds loud? That's compression. That's hyper compression, actually, is what gets that. A little bit of compression on your audio helps to smooth out the highs and lows and gives it a little bit more body. So I do a little bit of that. I don't think I do much anymore than that. The microphone I have is pretty darn good that I don't have to fiddle around with it. And that's always the case. Garbage in, garbage out. If you're getting bad stuff in, you're going to get bad stuff out, and there's nothing you can do about it. But if you're getting good stuff in, you know, you'll actually, in some cases, mess it up if you start fiddling with it too much. So I try not to do anything unless I have to. Sometimes if I've recorded an interview or something where two mics are open or I have audio from my iRiv or something, yeah, I may have to fiddle with it a bit more. But I try not too much. I got lucky, and another podcaster in Los Angeles was getting rid of a compression, an external compression unit, and I got that about 2 years ago. And so now I really do very little GarageBand. It's all done on the mic, in the board. It's a nice warm compression that I have on it, and that's pretty much it. Again, you don't have to fiddle a lot. If you can get a fairly quiet space to record, you know, like you want to get away from stuff like we're hearing here. I'll hear that on the recording of this talk. You'll notice the air conditioning. There's nothing you can do about it. Dogs barking, kids playing, whatever. I find out I have to, you know, record. I release my show on Fridays, and I've learned not to record on Fridays, though, because I live nearby to the Van Nuys Airport, which is the heaviest used private airport or private aviation airport in the country. And on Friday, all the rich people seem to take their jets out of there. So it's a constant litany of these, you know, noisy Learjets taking off. So just don't do it at that time. So we've exported out of GarageBand into iTunes. Again, free stuff. iTunes is free for anybody. You don't even need the iLife package for iTunes. You can download it for free. In iTunes, when I exported it from GarageBand, I already did my conversion to MP3. You know, I didn't have to, but in my case, that's the way I work. I'm looking for that final, because I'm not going to do anything else to it. It's pretty much ready to go. But there's a few things I do in iTunes. And you'll hear other podcasters talk about this. One of the most important things you need to do in your MP3 file that you're getting ready to release to the world is put in your MP3 tags. Okay? In iTunes, you do this by selecting the file and saying File, Get Info. Okay? You get a series of tabs. That Info tab is basically what I'm talking about. Now, this one doesn't have them filled out because I just exported this from GarageBand, so this is good. This podcast was actually called Your Career Needs a Holiday. It is by me, and I have a way that I spell my name like that. The year, album artist, I put in the same information I put in for artist. Album artist is interesting. It's when you have compilation albums, it allows you to put in the overall artist and then the individual artist on the thing. Some of the stuff we don't use for podcasting at all. Career opportunities, and I actually put in my tagline here, helping to build career. Oh gosh, I can't type today. The trouble with having a new computer, you haven't got used to the keyboard yet. Don't use the beats per minute, don't use the composer. I was talking with Evo Terra earlier about this. It's a specific reason I do this next step. The comments field, the notes field in an MP3, you don't often, the user really doesn't see it on a screen. Some esoteric players will actually show it to them when they play your audio. The thing is, when you put an MP3 out there in the world and it gets downloaded as a podcast, it very quickly gets disassociated from your website. It's kind of this thing that travels along on its own. And the worst case scenario is if you're, say, you're a band or a musician and you put an MP3 out there and someone listens to it, wow, this is great. Who's the artist? Well, guess what? If there's no MP3 information, no ID3 tags in here, they have no way of finding this artist that they've discovered they really, really like. So, in your comments field, first of all, make sure you fill out the artist and the album. That helps, because then they can at least do a web search on that information. Or, in the comments field, I usually put the website, a link to my career community site, an email address and my Google Voice phone number, which is my, you know, my listener line, if you will. So that if someone comes across this MP3, they can get info on it and say, well, where does this come from? And hopefully find that information in there. So you'll see a lot of people don't put any information in here. And they're doing themselves a disservice, and you will do yourself a disservice if you do that. Because people will want a way to get back to you, especially if they have a question, something you mentioned in the show, whatever. Give them an opportunity to actually be able to find you. Okay. Now, when I put in these tags, and genre we found out has changed, I typically set mine to speech. Now, Eva will tell you in his talk, he's doing the same talk tomorrow as well, when podcasts are downloaded by iTunes, by the user, iTunes changes several of these settings just on its own whim. The title, the name becomes the name of the blog post associated with the podcast, and the genre becomes, used to become podcast. We just found out, I was checking my files to see how well I'm doing during his talk, and I realized it actually set my genre to my category listing in the iTunes store. So my podcast is listed under careers, and I noticed my genre is set to careers now, which is new. I had never seen that. I think it's one of the later versions of iTunes that's doing that. So be aware of that. Still, if you're making your own compilation, say you're writing these out to CD or whatever, your settings will still stick on there, even though iTunes in the podcasting downloads will mess with them a bit. Okay, so I've put in there. Final, one of the most important steps is put some artwork on your podcast, okay? And I'm going to look here, and I bet I don't have actually the logo for Career Opportunities, but I'll use a different logo that I hear. Basically, you want that logo there because when people play it on an iPod, when people play it in Winamp, when people play it on their computer, that logo shows up and gives them further reinforcement of what the show is and who it is. It's one of the reasons you see that lots of podcast artwork has, guess what? Their face on it, including Career Opportunities. It's the person's face who does the show. It just makes it more intimate. It ties people. People, human beings, are keyed into recognizing the human face, and that's just one more way to reinforce your show. By glancing at the artwork, they know exactly what show it is. Yes?
Is there a standard size?
Yes, very good question. Very good question. This has evolved strictly because of iTunes. Before iTunes, there wasn't really a size. iTunes settled on 300 by 300. So 300 dots by 300 dots by 72 DPI, okay, is the standard podcast artwork. And this is artwork that you want to submit as part of your podcast to the iTunes store to get it listed in the iTunes store, and also artwork you paste in here. You can paste in any size photo here, but how it shows up will be a random. Typically, it resizes it down to 300 by 100. If people click on it, it actually does jump up at its normal size, but don't bet on that. You can also attach multiple pieces of artwork, and there becomes a little arrow up here. No one knows it. No one will ever see the other pieces of artwork on there because no one has a clue that that feature is even in iTunes. I stumbled across it by accident. Oh, that's interesting. You know, setting up a podcast when I accidentally added two artworks and went, well, what's that arrow? So, you know, started clicking through it. So don't depend on that at all. So here in iTunes, the next step is we need to take what iTunes has done, and iTunes took basically the name of the GarageBand file, the name of the show, and made that the name of the file. And actually, if you change the name in iTunes, that becomes the name of the MP3 file on your hard drive. Okay? So what you do now is you right-click on it, or control-click if you're on a Mac and don't have a right-click keyboard or whatever. Control-click on the PC, and you say Show in Finder. Oh, come on, Doug, click the right thing. Right-click, Show in Finder. There we go. Okay, this is the actual file sitting on my hard drive. Well, you see it has a very interesting name. It has the title as the name of the MP3. One of the things I'm very religious about doing is changing the name of my files into something that is web-friendly. Okay, these files are going to sit on a web server. Therefore, make their names web-friendly. It'll save you a lot of headaches down the line. First things is no spaces in the file name. It will drive you mad because you're wondering why isn't it linking? Why isn't the link working? And you realize you missed a space. There's just 100 reasons why you don't want them in there. Above and beyond that, certain programs will simply break if they see a space. If it gets encoded slightly incorrectly, it won't find your file. So I fall back, being old school like I am, I fall back on kind of the DOS naming rules because I find this to be the most effective way of doing it, which basically means lowercase only, okay? Because remember, most web servers are case sensitive because they're Unix machines, and therefore your holiday career is different from your holiday career. You're, you know, so be aware of that. I've faced that early on in my web work days and realized, you know what, just make it simple, make it all lowercase. Take out the spaces. I have a naming convention for mine. This sort of came out in the early days of podcasting that not everyone had an iPod. And it's still the case today. So the file name needs to have some indication of what it is. So I can't really just call it Your Career Needs a Holiday. What I do instead is I call all my files career-op-2009. Say we were releasing this today, 14th or 15th, whatever. That's how I name. So you know this is the Career Opportunity Show from November 14th, 2009. Yes? Question? Sir? Oh, I thought. Question? Oh. Okay. Wasn't sure. So now I have a nice web-friendly name that I'll be able to link to. I can probably, because I'm using a standard assortment, I could probably link to without even knowing what the name is. I know, oh, this is a show. I just know that's the way I do the shows. And obviously, you can play around with that. DOS was only 8 characters up front. You can go up to, what, 256 characters, I think, up front. Now, I wouldn't go that far, but you can expand, as this one does, beyond the typical 8 and 3. But keeping that kind of, you know, nice DOS-type name and the extension will save you a lot of headaches down the road. You'll simply be able to you'll have fewer problems linking up your files when you go to do your blog post and such like that. That makes sense, everybody? Okay? Mainly a lot of this, too, is what I've learned over the years of just preventing headaches, because I ran into the, you know, I ran into the to the problem and said, I'm never doing that again, and I'm going to remember it. Okay, so there's our file. Well, how many people are familiar with FTP? FTP. Yes, good. By the way, if you don't have your FTP username and login, you do not own your website, okay? I just wrote a blog post on this. This is the golden ticket to your website. If you don't have that information, you can't go in and change the most fundamental aspects about your website. A lot of people I deal with, because they're just getting started, they've had a webmaster or a web designer running their website, and I often have to disabuse them of some very bad ideas of, you know, they don't really control what they're trying to do. And so FTP program is very important. On the Mac, this is something I've actually paid for. It's called Yummy. I don't actually have it on this machine. It's not required. One of the better free FTP clients is called CyberDuck. It's available for free download, CyberDuck. Oh, look, it has an updatable. We'll say remind me later. CyberDuck allows you to connect up with your website and place this MP3 file you've created in its appropriate location. Here's another one of those things that I've run into over the years that will save you a lot of headaches, hopefully, that I had to go through. When you're stashing your files on your website, develop some sort of pattern to it, okay? In my case, I have developed the standard that you'll see the career folder here, right? If I double-click career, inside of career, this is my Career Opportunities podcast, you will see, oh, stop. I clicked on something. Inside, you'll see an audio folder, right? You'll also see, if you scroll down, you'll also see a video folder down there for the same purpose. Audio folder, 2008-2009. Inside of 2009 are all the shows for 2009. The other trick of that naming convention I just showed you is, because the date is recorded year, month, day, by sorting by name of the file, it actually sorts by the date as well. The old IT naming convention to give you that kind of benefit. So basically, I can see the last show I produced was 11/6, and it's there at the bottom of the listing because it just normally sorts out that way. So you can pick whatever way you want to set up your file structures that you want. The important thing is to pick a way to do it. So here I've got CyberDuck. I've got my website up there in CyberDuck. Here is the file on my hard drive, which I've named into web-friendly place. I merely take that, I drag it over, I drop it on CyberDuck, and up it goes to my website. Okay? That makes sense, everybody? Once that's done, you can actually go in and, you know, making some suppositions, you can say, well, I know this is, let me see here, welchwrite.com/career/audio/2009/career-op-2009-1106.mp3. I can actually check to make sure the file's sitting there correctly by basically putting in my address bar and saying play. Okay. If you want to get, you know, if you want to be really sure, go to the end of the file and play the last bit of it. Make sure the rest of it's there. Come on. Our Wi-Fi has been a little cranky here today, so we'll see. That didn't work so well. Basically, if you go to the end file, just listen to the end file, make sure that, you know, everything's there. It didn't get cut off or you got all the way there or whatever. MP3 files are a little funky in that if they get partially there, they'll still play. They're a little friendlier than other file types which will just say, well, I don't work because I'm not all there. MP3 files can fool you sometimes and not get all the way transferred but yet still play. So check the ending as well. Yes?
I've run into that. I have an hour and a half show that I upload, and I'm wondering, is it okay to split that show and upload in two?
There's no reason. Early in the days of podcasting, we had this issue where all of our web servers had limits to how much data per month we could send up. Okay? And so it really behooved us to keep our files as small as possible and stuff like that. The fact is, today, I will put up this talk, which is an hour. You know, it's going to be probably 60, 70 megabytes, whatever, and it's no problem for people to get. Sometimes when you're uploading, some of you may not be using FTP programs. You may be using a web-based uploader. Perhaps you're doing it through WordPress, or you're doing it through the control panel of your web hosting company. Then you can run into issues with bigger files. Because, in fact, I have a client right now who's running into that. They want to put up a longer show. When you're using these web-based uploaders, the slightest hiccup, like what I just experienced, will break the upload. FTP programs are a little bit more robust. They'll retry for a while, kind of wait for it to come back. And in some cases, they'll even be able to have a resumable upload, where even if it breaks and you start to upload it again and go, oh, hold on, I got this far before, wait a minute, and it doesn't try to upload the whole thing again. It actually starts where it left off. So that's a little bit of a benefit there. I don't like breaking up shows. If the show is one show, I don't like breaking them up because of the vagaries of podcasting. Sometimes people can get the second part but not get the first part automatically. There's a little hitch that if you release more than one show a day, in a 24-hour period, there can be a thing where iTunes, because of its default settings, will only pick up the second show. It will only pick up the latest show, and so they don't get the first part. So if you can avoid that, or spread them out more over, make sure they're at least on separate days and perhaps separate weeks if you're doing it that way, you're a little bit safe from that. But I tend to, if I have an hour interview, I'll put up an hour interview. I just think it makes the most sense. You'd listen to that way on radio or on television, so it doesn't really make any sense to break it up.
Do you think it's better to use a simple FTP program like this versus Dreamweaver?
Boy. I don't have anything particularly bad to say about Dreamweaver. Dreamweaver, I tend to think of it, no, that's for sending HTML files up, not for doing larger files. I tend to like to put bigger files up with a more dedicated FTP program. And again, that's probably just me. That's probably me just being
old. For me, it's worth trying, though, because often the audio gets split.
If you're having trouble with it, I would definitely say try something else. Because if it's breaking, it could be simply that your internet connection is being a little flaky too. So then it's where's the problem? Is it in the program, or is the whole internet connection kind of going up and down? Because that can cause that type of behavior as well. Okay. Sometimes it just sits there. It just takes sitting there and watching your FTP go to figure it out.
Most FTP programs will have SSL or some sort of security system along with them.
Well, and more, they're more intelligent. I mean, FTP is the second program ever developed for the internet. Okay, the first was Telnet, so the terminals could talk to computers. Then they figured we have to have a way to move files between the computers, and that was FTP. So it's an old process. They have added some very nice features on. Most recently, this whole concept of resumable uploads or resumable downloads. So if something does happen, it can resume from where it left off. It's a little more intelligent. Some days I do FTP from the command line. I mean, it works just like it always has. If I'm in a bind, you know, it's available on Windows or Macs. You just run it, and sometimes it can really help you out of a jam if you need to do something quickly. So I do believe in my mind, just my own experience. Yeah, having a dedicated FTP program is just better. Yeah, again, that's my opinion. So now we've produced our file, we've tagged our file, we've uploaded our file to our web server. Now it's available to the world. Now, of course, no one knows it's there, because they can't tell it's there. Unless you know the URL, you can't play the file. You don't know what's there. Obviously, you could email to someone, but it really doesn't matter. So now we move into the realm of, okay, I've got my... The podcast is actually produced at this point. Now I have to release it. So it's kind of a different, kind of the second stage here. The way most of us release our podcast is through a blog. Whether that's WordPress, whether that's WordPress.com, the WordPress hosted, whether that's Blogger.com. Again, I'm so old school, the only real free blogging platform out there when I got started was Blogger. And I was actually blogging before there were blogs, because I was using text includes to put stuff on my homepage. You know, I could edit one file and it would just show up there and stuff like that, but blogging engines simplified things dramatically. In this case, you're looking at my WordPress login. I come in here, I say, actually, I do much the same thing I do with the podcast. I'll edit the last week's post, copy it as my template, and then go from there. Because in each of my, in the case of Career Opportunities, since it's a pre-written column, I actually put the entire text of the column in the blog post. And so I bring up the old post, I select the whole thing, put it in a new post, and take out the old text, put in the new text, because I want to keep the stuff at the top and the stuff at the bottom, which is, you know, Twitter information and contact information, stuff like that. The other important parts of your blog post are you have to tell people where to find your podcast. Well, even today, people are still just getting the concept of this whole subscription thing for podcasts. So a large number of your listeners are going to come by listening right from the website. They need a play button on the website. And there's a variety of ways of doing this. You'll see, first of all, actually, let me go up and bring up the actual website here so you can see what it looks like to the end user. Career. Okay. And we're here until 3:15, right? Okay. So, come on. Oh, geez. Why are you being so butt-ass slow? 3 years I've been here at this conference, and I've never seen the Wi-Fi being so problematical. Usually it's just blistering. Basically, in your blog post, I include two things, and then it'll pop up here in a second while I'm talking. One is a listen link, which is just a bare link, a bare hyperlink to that MP3 file that brings it up much like you saw. In most cases, it's going to bring up the QuickTime player on the person's computer. They'll say play, and it will play. Over the years, it's been somewhat problematical. Windows machines were specifically horrible at this. They'd often have to download the entire file with no indication of what they were doing. So half the time, the users didn't even realize they were downloading anything. And then at the end, it would play it. So as things have continued on, we've started adding some form of player to the website. And it's going to pop up here in a second as soon as it finishes loading. And I'm sure you see this on lots of different podcasting. The typical WordPress little gray box with the pause symbol and the play symbol that they can click once and the show simply starts playing. So that's how you service these people who haven't graduated, shall we say, to the actual process of subscribing to your podcast or downloading your podcast. Again, a significant number of your listeners are going to come directly from the website. It's just the easiest way for them to consume it. So you need to have, in my case, I have to have both of these links in there. Now, the listen link isn't required. It's kind of the old school of way of doing it, except for one reason. Back when I started podcasting, there was no blogging. Blogger did not create a podcast-ready RSS feed. Okay, an RSS feed is how people subscribe and monitor your blog and therefore your podcast. So when we first started podcasting, I was actually hand-coding a text file, RSS, copying and pasting. I actually used Adam Curry's, the Podfather's original RSS file, edited it to fit my show, and that's what I used as my show, and I had to hand-edit it. The minute Feedburner, now it's feedburner.google.com, the minute it came around, I grabbed onto it with both arms because it meant I wouldn't have to do that manual step anymore of editing my own RSS feed. Feedburner is it's a pretty nice service. Since Google's bought it, it's kind of a little bit of an ugly stepchild. They're not quite sure what to do with it. But it does one dramatic thing. It looks at any RSS feed, say from a blog, looks in that RSS feed for any media file, audio or video, PDF, and spits out a nice, pretty, podcast-ready RSS feed. which can be subscribed to in iTunes and deliver your content automatically. The way FeedBurner sees these media files is it looks for a link in the RSS file. So by putting in the listen link there, that's what FeedBurner sees. It sees that MP3 file and goes, oh, okay. And when it spits out its nice, pretty file, it includes that MP3 as an enclosure. I like to tell people, think of enclosures like email attachments. They're something that travel along with your RSS feed. They don't in reality do that. They actually still sit on your web server. But to iTunes, it's as if your podcast traveled along with the feed. That make sense to everybody? So that's why I still have both of those things in there, the One Touch Player and the listen link here. Now, if you want to go real fancy, and you know, I'm still happy with FeedBurner at this point, but new people setting up new podcasts and new blogs using WordPress, I will typically refer to Blueberry, who is one of our sponsors here as well, Blueberry PowerPress. It's a plugin that easily plugs into WordPress that does everything that FeedBurner did for us in the early days. It puts in all of the appropriate iTunes tags, so it has your artwork and all your categorization. It picks up the enclosures automatically. It produces a nice, pristine RSS 2.0 feed that anybody can subscribe to as a podcast. It's somewhat the cobbler's children have no shoes. Because I've been doing it so long, I have not yet moved up to using that because I haven't had a need to. I'm on the verge, though, of bringing that control back into my own hands on my own WordPress sites and doing that with a plugin rather than using FeedBurner for that. So now that One Touch Player did come up, we can click the One Touch Player, like a lot of people will do, and away it goes.
Helping to build.
The one thing you don't get is obviously they can't resume where they left off. You lose the advantages of a podcast. They have to be connected to the internet. They have to be on a computer. They can't listen to it. They can't listen to what they want, where they want it, when they want it, which I think is one of the most powerful things about podcasting. Okay. That is basically my process. Okay. You have seen pretty much from sitting down at the computer on a Friday morning or a Thursday night, recording my show, exporting the MP3 into iTunes, setting my iTunes tag, uploading it, posting the blog post, and at that point, that particular episode is now available to the world. Any questions? Yes?
Did you have a specific time on Friday to do it, or did you just do it like Friday evening?
It varies considerably. Sometimes it'll come out on Thursday night if I have something going on Friday. It's more important that it is weekly. The fact is people don't see the show immediately.
Right.
Their machine's going to grab it, you know, when it next checks. So it's not like must-see TV where they're waiting for it. You know, I wish they were. But I think they're waiting for it at 8 o'clock at night. So you have a little play there. I do sometimes get people say, hey, did you miss your show? And say, no, I'm a little late this week. I was having to deal with the kids. So, it'll come out in a couple hours or whatever. But that's pretty rare because people don't actually probably even consciously understand that it comes out on Friday. They just know that it comes out every week. Okay? Yes?
So I'm actually still hand coding mine.
Yeah. I've been there, done that.
So I have a couple that I submitted to the iTunes store. And so sometimes I have a problem with it. The artwork should be included. And when you download it, the artwork is there. But on the iTunes store, the logo isn't showing up.
Probably iTunes, when iTunes first added podcast support, one of the pickiest things was the picture. And that's why I say 300 dots by 300 dots by 72 dots DPI seems to be fine. If you do it in that fashion, 301, 302, all bets are off. It's really picky about that artwork. But that said, if you get it in that format, it should pick it up right away. The other thing to check is check the iTunes tags in your hand-coded feed. And boy, they got to be pristine. They have to be exactly right or iTunes sticks out its tongue at you and says, no, I'm not going to do it. So just be aware of that. Because it's the artwork, I'm going to guess that it's probably either it's not quite the right format or the URL has just one simple little thing and it's not finding it.
Is there a file size limit?
300 by 300 by 72 is there, you know.
Yeah, but I mean, like how many K it can be.
But typically, it's going to be small at that resolution. It's a fairly small file anyway. In fact, I can tell you my New Media Interchange logo that I put on there. Let's see how big that is.
You can have a limit on that.
You should never get close to it, really. It's 102K is the logo I pasted in there. It's only 102. It's only three colors though. So say a picture, maybe it's 200. But you know they should never be that large, because if you stick to that size, there's a finite limit. I mean, if it was all black, it would be, you can do the math. I'm not going to attempt it here. You can actually do the math and know exactly how big it is. So that's one of the things. But check the URL in your iTunes artwork tab. That tag, it typically it's been the size. It was just very fussy, and I think it remains fussy to this day.
Also, do you know the difference? There's like several different iTunes description tags, like they're in different places. And I don't know. I just copy paste the same ones, but I don't know if they show up differently in the store somewhere.
The trick is change one of them and see which one changes in the store. Honestly, that is the way I would do it, because I off the top of my head, I don't really know. PowerPress actually has a neat feature that it shows you what the iTunes store will look like as you put it into PowerPress. And so you could also use that to kind of see which one it's talking. Oh, that's the meta description. That's the, you figure out which one it is. I had to do that recently, but I actually don't remember off the top of my head which one it is. Which one is which. That's the blueberry one. Yeah, the original version called PodPress was open source. It had some issues with certain versions of WordPress, but I think they resolved those. So I think you can still use either one at this point. PowerPress has some nicer features in it, though. Yes.
I was going to ask you that. What's the difference between PodPress?
PowerPress is just a little nicer looking, and it has a few more features in it. It also has, if you're on Blueberry, it has specific Blueberry network features too. It works for any WordPress installation, but if you're working with Blueberry as your hosting company or you're part of their network, it has special features for them. Thought there was something. Somebody said some things like I wanted to. Well, I'm sure. Other questions? Yes, sir.
How do you record your interviews?
Typically, you may see this lavalier that I'm wearing has two microphones. It's a stereo lavalier, terminating in a standard eighth-inch jack. This is how I typically record most interviews. I clip one to my interview subject and one to myself, and record them right to the iRiver. And works with any recorder. If you're in a quiet enough area and you have a standalone recorder, obviously you can also just put the recorder between you. If you want to go further, and I've done this, set up a little studio in my home office, because typically it's just me recording, but I have set up a table and put up two nice condenser microphones. And with certain software, you can actually bring each individual into a separate channel in GarageBand, so you can adjust their level separately, adjust their EQ separately and all that. And that's kind of a step up in quality, but you can do that as well. I've also recorded interviews over Skype. I did an interview with a gentleman in Tokyo over Skype, and it's amazing the quality you can get out of even those voiceover IP recording these days. Yes, sir, in the back.
Is there any specific software that you use with Skype, or did you just configure
that? You're going to call me out again. I'm so old school. I have two computers, so I literally would do on my Mac Mini that I have as my production environment with my nice mic, I would just do the Skype call on that. Off my mixing board, there is a monitor out that I would literally just plug into either the iRiver or into my other PC and have the recorder running and just record it like that. There are, Call Recorder is a software that plugs into Skype that does what I was mentioning to him. I'm going to start investigating a little bit more. It actually discreetly takes each side of the call and places it in its own track. Because typically with Skype, you go into the issue where you're very loud and they're very soft. And it really helps if you can break them out like that. Otherwise, you have to use the levelator or hand normalize, which basically means changing the volume level every time they talk. But their call recorder is one that jumps to mind for a plugin for Skype. Anything else?
Do you host all your files in your Linux or?
I actually host on GoDaddy. One of the things that changed, early on in the areas of podcasting is, my initial web host had a 25 gigabit limit for traffic per month. GoDaddy had 250 gigabytes. Because again, I'm doing audio, I never really come even near to, and they're short audio, I never really come near to hitting my limit. So I host them right off my own website. You can host them on Libsyn. You can host them on the archive.org. And a variety of others. Just I obviously ran out of time, did not even touch video. The process is very similar as far as editing. You produce an M4V file. You put your tags on it like we did with iTunes. What I have changed in the last year, 2 years or so, is I don't host video files on my site at all anymore. I used to have to put the QuickTime files on my website and serve them up from there. Now I use blip.tv, a free video hosting service. And the nice thing that they do is they give me a nice one-touch player, like YouTube does, nice one-touch embed that I can put in my blog. Under that, I put one line that says iPod Ready Video. That's a link to the M4V I uploaded to them. They will serve that out as a podcast. So my podcast listeners, just by the inclusion of that one line, get that video automatically without any further intervention from me. That was a big thing for me. It kind of kills two birds with one stone. Does more than that, too. But it really is nice that I can, I don't have to host those, because those files can get to be very large. And the nice thing about Blip, as opposed to YouTube or something else, they'll take an hour file. They'll take an hour and a half talk that I've done as one file. I've uploaded something as large as 700 megabytes to them with no problem. So if you have any further questions, please feel free to contact me. As you saw, all the information is here. There's a million ways to contact me. You will find out more than you ever wanted to know about me. And obviously, I'm here for the rest of the day today. I'm here tomorrow. Tomorrow, I'm doing a talk specifically on how to maintain control of your RSS feed, because it can be a very important thing. It's losing your RSS feed or losing control of it is like having to change your phone number or your mailing address. It's rather painful, and you don't want to do it. So, again, feel free to contact me online. Also, newmediainterchange.com is my free group where we have online discussions. We have face-to-face meetings and so on. Thank you very much.
This is Careers in New Media with Douglas E. Welch. For more information, visit the website, welchwrite.com/CIP. That's WELCHWRITE.com/CIP. This show is a production of WelchWrite.com, WelchWrite.com.